We are calling to order the Public Hospital District Number 1 Board Meeting of Commissioners. It's Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020, 1:30 here at Frank Wilson EMS. We are just waiting on one of our commissioners who's just still at work today. That would be Commissioner Gail Lachine-Seitz. I am Commissioner Lindstrom, Annalisa. We have new commissioners to introduce. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Kyle Loring.
Hi, Kyle.
Everett Clary.
Trish Lane.
The camera's right there,
okay,
you guys. And just so you know, like, it's the audio's a little tricky, so we just need to be sure we're taking a pause and not talking over each other. And so I'll hand it off to our attorney, Rich Davis. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And just so you know, Trish, you're the only one I can't see, which is fine, but the camera is fixed. I can kind of see Pam all the way over to Kyle, and it's fine, but I just wanted you to know kind of what the visual is on my end here.
Okay.
So if you were to raise your hand, I wouldn't see if you had a question. And I want this to be interactive. If you have a question as we go along, feel free to ask a question. So here's my idea for today. We really have two parts to this workshop. The first one is open government training. We're going to talk about the Open Public Meetings Act and the Public Records Act. And then I thought we'd just take maybe a 10-minute break, give people a chance to stretch their legs, and then we'll talk about the role of the commission and the individual commissioners. And I know you have a meeting afterwards, so I'll be mindful of that and respectful of your time, because I know that it'll be a long day for you. So we'll just launch right into it. The thing that is going to be a little tricky is I've got slides. I've got a laptop in front of me, which you may or may not see. I'm going to just flip slides whenever I'm done talking about one, but that's not going to show up on your side. In fact, I don't know if you have a box in the corner that I think I'd have to share my screen for you to see my slide deck. So I think you're just going to have to refer to your slides. I think it would be more effective than just having the slide up there with a disembodied voice preaching at you. So let's try this. And if you want me to put the slides up, I can change this up. That sound okay? Okay, so first slide. Why are we here? Well, we're here because we have new commissioners, and it's the law. You have to go through open government training when you become a new commissioner. This is not something that's self-explanatory or that you may have cared much about before you became a commissioner. But the law, which actually this wasn't always the law, but a few years ago, there was a big push to make changes to the Public Records Act and Public Meetings Act. And part of that was to train new commissioners. And then every commissioner that's had this training every 4 years must take it again. And when I was coming over there, I had a packet of certificates that you all could put, or that Pam could put into the file to show that you've taken this training, just as a record. And I will just email that to her, and she can make the, she can put it into each of your files there. So we've got a record you've taken the training. As we go through, if you have a question, just let me know. Raise your hand or speak up, and we'll try and answer it. So I'll just launch right into it. Open Public Meetings Act. So the basic premise of the Open Public Meetings Act is that all meetings are open to the public. Every portion is open to the public from start to finish, with one exception, and that is executive session. We'll have a lot to say about executive sessions and when you can do that. What's the purpose of the law? Well, the purpose is that the people who elect you into office think they deserve transparency. They deserve to understand the decisions that are made and how those decisions are reached. The statute itself even says that people insist on remaining informed so that they can have control over the instruments they've created. So that's the background to this law. The Open Public Meetings Act applies any time there is a quorum of elected officials who are discussing agency business. And so if you're sitting around the table discussing, you know, who's going to win the Super Bowl, if that's why you got together, that's not a meeting that's subject to the act. But if you are talking about Public Hospital District Number 1 business and you've got a quorum, which is three of you, then you have a meeting. You can also have a meeting if, you know, in this day and age, you can get on a phone call with more than one person. So if you had a telephone call where you patched in two of your other commissioners, you could have a meeting. You could also have a meeting through, as we'll talk about a little bit later, through email exchange. So there are some traps, right? We think of a meeting as meeting in person, but it can be much broader than that. And you got to be careful, particularly in the context of emails. So again, Open Public Meetings Act does not apply if you're sitting around talking about things that are unrelated to district business. Or let's say you go to an awards banquet for the district employees, or you go to a conference, to public hospital district conference or something like that. You don't have to note that up as a special meeting. You could, particularly if you think you're going to get together at some point during the meeting and talk about district business, then you would definitely have to. But those kinds of interactions between commissioners are not subject to the act. The interesting thing here is that the Open Public Meetings Act does not apply to labor negotiations. Doesn't apply at all. So what that means is, typically, when you're talking about labor negotiation strategy or a grievance or anything dealing with collective bargaining, you call an executive session. Technically speaking, that's not correct. It's a closed session. And because the act doesn't even apply to labor negotiations. And so, although we tend to call an executive session, have that at the end of our open meeting, you all could meet anytime you wanted to outside of a meeting and talk about labor strategy or talk about agreements or any issues dealing with collective bargaining. Okay. All right, next slide. What's a governing body? Well, the statute says that meetings of the governing body of a public agency are open to the public. And all persons, doesn't say all persons within the district, just all persons. It means anybody who wants to can attend, whether they're from Snohomish County, from Wyoming, or wherever they may be. Right? Those meetings are open to the public. So what's a governing body? Well, in your case, it's the Board of Commissioners, 5 elected commissioners. And it could also be a committee of the board, although I'm not sure. I'll just throw it out there. Do you ever form a committee, ad hoc committee, or have any standing committees of any kind?
We have subcommittees that, you know, like we have a finance committee and we have an integration committee. It's just it's 2 commissioners usually, and they go to meetings right. And then report back. So, but it wouldn't be anything that would be justify a quorum.
Do they make recommendations, or do they actually make decisions on behalf of the board?
Yes, probably.
Is that right?
Decision.
Huh? Recommendation.
I didn't think we delegated authority.
I mean, I would think that you would come, I think in theory, you would come back to the board and you would say, you know, we were part of this integration meeting, here's what was decided. Yes.
Very common way.
It seems that at least in the past it has been that way. I don't know that it will be that way moving forward.
If all the committee is doing is going out, kind of fact-finding, making recommendations back to the full board, then it's not subject to the Open Public Meetings Act. But if you have a committee that's actually acting on behalf of the governing body in the sense that it's exercising actual or de facto decision-making authority, then it is subject to the Open Public Meetings Act. Doesn't sound like you have a committee like that right now, but you just need to be aware of it in case you ever formed one.
Nathan had something to add to that.
There's only one committee that was ever delegated authority to execute their decision, and that was a committee a few years ago over Richard Frazier. So with that committee, even though it had 2 people on it, they were authorized to execute. Does that mean they were subject to the OPMA?
They had authority to actually execute a legal document?
They did.
The contract?
Yeah.
Was that contract previously approved by the board, or did the committee approve it?
I don't recall. But in theory, it was just, instead of trying to pin down exactly what happened, it was just in theory, would that be subjects, even though there's 2 people?
It might. My advice is always, if there's a gray area, if it's on the border, treat it as an open public meeting and comply with the requirements.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
That's good to know.
We're getting a lot of is there some noise over by the microphone? We're getting a lot of
a lot of feedback.
Fan. Where is the microphone?
We might be getting the fan from the in. From the laptop itself.
Is the or it might be coming in.
I think it's probably. Did it just kind of start, Rich? Did you notice it just kind of suddenly?
Yeah, I was just kind of rustling around and.
I think it was noise coming in through the door.
Okay.
Is it better?
Is it better?
Yeah, it is better.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's go on now. What is a meeting? A meeting is kind of circular definition. It's a meeting at which a public agency takes action. And a meeting does not require the physical attendance of the commissioners in person. Again, this can occur by phone or email. So an email exchange can constitute a meeting if you've got three or more commissioners that are conversing about an issue through email. Now, the interesting thing is that if one commissioner sends out a lengthy email just describing their thoughts and opinions about an issue affecting the district, that's okay. But if there is a response to that, like a reply all or a response to two commissioners or more, then that becomes a meeting. So it's the colloquy, the discussion that happens through email that creates the meeting. So you gotta watch out for that. So the safe thing to do is to not respond. Yes?
So I've got a question on that note because I've not ever been working in this context before, and I find this very interesting and very challenging. If you want to know what your peers are thinking about a particular subject that's up for discussion, that you just everybody wants to chime in with their opinion, okay? Just like you were saying, a lengthy email that goes out to everybody, here's what my thoughts are. And somebody else says, here's what my thoughts are. And somebody else says, well, here's what my thoughts are. Then all the commissioners know what everybody else's thoughts are. So you can have an idea before you go into a meeting. I mean, it's not like you're having a discussion. Is that, you can't do that? Can't do that.
No, you can't do that.
Okay.
That's one of the things you're going to learn is that the Open Public Meetings Act is very restricted. And this feeds into when we talk about the role of the commission later on.
Oh, you're cutting out.
Hold on.
You're back.
Wait.
You cut out.
Hold on.
Can you not hear me?
You're cutting out. So.
But now you're back. So I think you're good.
I'm back now?
Yeah. It's the connection's a little iffy, but I think if we continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll move the microphone a little closer. Does that help?
No, it's we're seeing a jump in the video and a little pause in the audio delay. There's a little delay, but yeah,
yeah. It's like an issue with the bitrate between you and us.
Well, let's carry on. We'll see how it resolves itself, and if not, we'll start waving flags or something.
Okay. Wave if you've got issues. But what I was saying is that no, a discussion like that would be a discussion. Even if you didn't hit a reply all, but let's say the second came.
Dang it.
No.
Yeah, we lost you.
Commissioner Senate, that was on this topic. What I think? No. And maybe Sarah.
Boy, it's not good.
Maybe we can start this fresh. Let me just get the expert in.
Okay, thanks, Rich.
Hang up and call you.
Okay.
Oh, man, on an island. Call quality
one.
Not very good.
There you go. One star.
Three and a half.
Are we getting this through Teams?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I haven't tried this option with this particular program. Oh, there we are. Look at that.
My very orange sweater. Oh, my God.
It's
See, I'm in a really good spot because I am right behind Lisa.
Look over there.
Yeah.
It's much better. It's much better over there.
Oh, I look better over there? Okay, good.
Yellow mustard in it than what this is.
Okay. If you're not plugged in through the Ethernet, are
you? No, we're wired into the...
Because, I mean, that can help improve things a little bit.
Right.
Maybe just enough.
No, seeing myself.
We might be in through Wi-Fi.
That's how he's connected.
Are you back?
We're back.
I just see blue cables and
How does it seem now?
These are for the projector.
You're delayed.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know.
It's a little funky. How about if we can proceed, but if I raise my hand, it means like stop.
We lost you.
Because I can't hear you or you're low.
Of course, you may not be able to see us when you're raising your hand.
Okay,
assuming you can see us when we, yeah.
You're coming through okay over here. We just installed fiber, and so we have a lot of bandwidth. It might be, I don't know what you have over there.
It's probably us.
We have fiber, but I think what's happening is we've got that particular laptop connected through our Wi-Fi, which is generally good, but...
Why?
Yeah.
Okay. Could be.
So.
All right. Well, we'll carry on, and if, like I said, you need...
We left off with you talking about why group emails are a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act.
Yeah, let me go back to that. It is, I think, in the example that Gail had, that it would be a violation. Oh, Trish, I'm sorry. Thank you for thinking that. I knew that. I think it would be a violation because... you're essentially talking about the same issue between multiple commissioners, at least comprising a quorum. That's a dangerous thing to do. The problem is that if anybody ever makes a public records request later and they see that discussion, it's a pretty easy violation to prove that there was a violation. So my advice is just be very careful about that. Okay, I think we're on to the next slide now, action. So again, a meeting is a meeting involving a quorum where action is taken. So what is action? Action is really the transaction of the business of the hospital district. It can include public testimony, although you probably rarely ever have public testimony. More than likely, your meetings consist of deliberations and discussions between commissioners on issues that require a vote, require some formal action. You could be evaluating your vendors or services that are being provided to you, things of that nature. That's all action. Then there's a thing called final action, and final action is where you actually take a vote, where you approve a motion or you approve a resolution, something like that. Any final action has to be taken out in public. Unlike deliberations, there are certain deliberations you can have back in executive session, but final action always has to be out in the public. You can't take secret ballots back in executive session either. So you can't go back there, have a discussion, and kind of poll the commissioners on how they would vote when they come out.
Right. And then also in special meetings, you're not meant to take action in a special meeting, correct? Versus a regular meeting?
The same principles apply to a special meeting as apply to a regular meeting.
Okay.
The only difference with a special meeting is you can't take final action on anything that's not on the agenda at a special meeting.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll talk about that in a little bit.
Okay.
So one of the things that comes up from time to time is you're going off to a conference or a retreat or something like that, and you travel together. A quorum of members travel together. It's almost impossible for the public to know what you're talking about when you travel together. But there's an appearance that, well, you could be talking about district business, and that's a way to avoid the Open Public Meetings Act. There's nothing technically wrong about it. All I just pointed out is one of those things that the optics of it can look a little suspicious. If you've got people out in your community that are kind of suspicious in the first place. But it's completely fine to do that as long as you're not talking about district business. Okay, so now let's talk about the two kinds of meetings. You get regular meetings and special meetings. Regular meetings are those that occur on a recurring basis. You should establish a schedule of those meetings at the beginning of the year. Typically, it's done through a resolution or it could be a motion, but there should be something that's adopted at the beginning of the year. It says when your regular meetings will be held. And so far as your notice requirements go, you have to make that agenda of each regular meeting available online on your website no later than 24 hours in advance of the start of the meeting. There's some exemptions for smaller agencies, like an agency doesn't have a website, or if you have fewer than 10 full-time employees, then you're not required to do this. This was one of those statutes that came about at the same time that the training statute obligations were imposed. And it's kind of a statute without any teeth. I just mentioned it here in the bottom parts of this slide that even though you have an agenda that's posted, you can change that. You're not limited to the things that are listed on that agenda. And if you take, it doesn't invalidate any action that would otherwise be legal simply because it wasn't on that agenda. It's more of you obviously want to try and comply with it, but if there's a new issue that were to have come up within that 24-hour period and you have to talk about it, you're completely fine in doing so. It should be the exception, not the rule. Likewise, someone who thought that that was a violation because you talked about something or took action on something, even though it wasn't on the agenda, they wouldn't have a basis to recover any attorney's fees or costs if they filed an Open Public Meetings Act lawsuit. So, again, it's kind of a statute without any teeth, but it is something you need to comply with. Special meetings, on the other hand, in contrast to a regular meeting, if you have a special meeting, you're limited to taking action just on the things that are on the agenda. All right. Special meetings can be called either by the president or the presiding officer or majority of the members. Again, 24 hours notice is required to be given to the commissioners and given to any media that may have requested to be notified. And then you also need to put a notice at your main entrance of your principal place where you have your meetings. And then if you're having that meeting somewhere offsite, you've got to post it there as well. So you've got some posting requirements and for a special meeting. Again, business to be transacted, you can talk about things that are not on the agenda at a special meeting, but you can't take any action if it's not on the special on the agenda for the special meeting. So that's the main difference. Okay, emergency special meeting. Yes, Nathan, go ahead.
So am I reading this correctly then? We don't have to give notice for regular meetings. You only do for special meetings. Is that accurate?
Have to give notice to the commissioners?
To the public.
To the public, no, you've already done that. You put the agenda up, right? You've got to post the agenda, but there's no other notice requirement because you've done that at the beginning of the year. You say, and I don't know when your meetings are held, if it's like the first and third Wednesdays of every month, whatever it is, you've done that at the beginning of the year, and that's public notice.
Okay, thank you.
But you do need to put the agenda up on your website.
Perfect.
So emergency special meetings, you probably don't have these very often. Almost nobody does. The fire districts sometimes do. A good example would have been the Oso landslide when a lot of districts in that area had to call special meetings, emergency special meetings. Those are meetings where you don't require the 24-hour advance notice in order to have it. But you have to have a real emergency that's going to involve injury to people or damage to property if you don't have that meeting immediately. So there are times now where from time to time your commissioners will want to participate in a meeting even though they're not on the island. They're out on vacation or they're just away. So you can have remote participation. In other words, you can do a meeting that is typically sent by speakerphone. The requirements are that the person that is calling in, the commissioner that's calling in, can hear what's being said, and that anybody who's attending as a member of the public can hear what's being said. I had a meeting just last month where it was right before Christmas. It's like on the 23rd. None of the commissioners wanted to come in. So we had, at the main office, we had a speakerphone. We had the secretary there, and every one of them called in. And nobody from the public showed up, but had they showed up, they would have been able to hear every commissioner. And that was a meeting. All right. So technology, the point is that technology has made this easier, and you can have, you can attend meetings in absentia. Some districts, and I don't think you guys do this, but do you take your meetings, tape record your meetings, or broadcast them? You do. Do you broadcast them live, or are they just taped?
Taped and posted to our website.
Okay. Sometimes agencies like to stream their meeting, and then others, becoming more and more common now to record the meetings either audio or audio visual and then post those online. And that's fine. I think that it enhances the transparency of the agency. It allows people who wouldn't otherwise be able to come to the meeting to attend and see what the commissioner's discussions are. It does kind of change the meeting, and in a lot of ways, I think that it's good. I mean, I've had some clients where commissioners were, let's say, at odds with one another, and not in a good way. In other words, the discussion turned personal a lot of times. Then the meetings became televised, and the behavior improved, and it was a good thing. And so I actually am kind of in favor of this, so I kind of like what you're doing there. Public attendance. There's a lot of questions always come up about public attendance. So I'll spend a minute here on this. You can't impose any conditions on a member of the public who wants to attend your meeting. Like I said, you can't verify that they're from your jurisdiction. They could be from somewhere else. You can't require a person to register or to give any information. There's one of our clients where they have a sign-up sheet. You walk in the door and they want you to sign up, but it's not enforceable. They do that just for their records, and if a member of the public decided they didn't want to put their name down, wouldn't have to. I know you have a public comment period. In fact, don't you have two public comment periods at your meeting? Do you still do that?
Right now we have one, but we are talking about changing that to having one at the beginning and one at the end. Is that correct? But we haven't been able to officially change those things until we've had an official meeting, which is later today. Is that
okay?
And also, I should let you know our commissioner Gail Glishing Seitz is here. And can you see the screen where we are? You're a little bit cut off, Gail. I'm sorry.
All right. Good to meet you.
Okay, so we're all here now.
All right, yeah. Great. So one of the things you can do, though, just for ease of allowing public comment, is you can have a sign-up sheet. It doesn't happen a whole lot, but sometimes you'll have a meeting where a lot of people want to speak, and your room is packed, mm-hmm. and they want to talk, and so a sign-up sheet for that purpose would be fine. Public involvement or public comment period. First thing to realize is it's not required by statute. You don't have to offer it. It's at your sole discretion to do so. But many elected officials believe that it's useful to hear from the public. It's really the public's only opportunity to speak to the commission directly. In most of the commission meetings that I go to, I'd say over 95%, they have a public comment period. Public comment period is just that. It's an opportunity for the public to speak. The commission is not required to engage in a discussion or to answer questions. Because this is not required by law, there really are no rules to it. You get to set the rules. And you can have bylaws, you can have rules associated with your meetings. I don't know if you have ever adopted anything like that, but you could impose certain restrictions on the public comment period. And so, and the statute does speak to this. So common rules for your meetings could include things like procedural rules. Like, are you going to use Robert's Rules of Order? Are you going to have some other kinds of procedural rules? Another example would be certain limits on the public comment portion of your meeting, such as, we're only going to spend a half hour today allowing public comment because we have a full agenda. You can change that from meeting to meeting. So if you have a very light agenda, you may not want to limit your public comment period. if you've got a very packed agenda and you know it's going to take hours for your meeting to conclude, you may want to limit that. You can put a limit on the ability of a member from the public to speak one time. You get one shot at it. Limit the time that they can speak to something like 3 minutes. And then what I saw here a couple of years ago, I was doing, I was helping South County Fire with a formation of an RFA with the city of Linwood. And I went to the city and they had a restriction in public comment that said, you can't comment on anything that is going to be acted upon tonight by our commission. So the way they did it is they would bring an issue up to the commission just for discussion in the first meeting. And then they would bring it back for action the second meeting. And public comment could be addressed to that particular topic in the first meeting or any meeting before that. But once you get to the meeting where the council was going to take action, he said no public comment on that. So if a member got up, and it did happen, where a person in the public wanted to speak to that, the council chair would say, no, I'm sorry, that's off limits tonight. So you can impose these kinds of restrictions if you want. And another common one that I like to see is keep your comments respectful and focus on the issues, not personal kinds of comments. So anyhow, something to think about if you have never adopted or thought about passing bylaws or procedural rules. I can give you some examples of that. I know I've passed along a few in the past, but anyhow, that's just something to... you want any I can help with. Sometimes you'll have a situation, interruptions and disruptions. Sometimes you'll have a situation where somebody in the public who's attending your meeting becomes disruptive. They start, trying to engage in a conversation, and when they're not happy with their responses, they get a little boisterous. What do you do in that case? Well, you can have the person, you can ask the person to leave the meeting. This is the one situation where you can say, you're not entitled to be here, you need to leave. And if they don't leave and you've got law enforcement available, you can have the person taken out of the room. You can also, if it's a whole crowd of people, and I've had these come up before, where a volunteer fire district and the chief, very popular chief, was going to be terminated by the commission. Packed the room with volunteers and family members, and it got pretty aggressive, and the commission ended up saying, everybody's leaving, you gotta get out of here. And they were able to do that and then continue the meeting. And it doesn't happen very often, but you do have that right. The only caveat to that is, you have to allow the media to stay. So if there's somebody there from the radio station and a local newspaper, they get to stay. You can't kick them out. All right. Executive session. This is the part of the meeting where you get to either kick the public out or go to a separate room and talk in private. In order to go into executive session, you have to have a specific purpose that's set forth in RCW 4230. Before you go into executive session, you have to identify how long you're going to be in there and why you're going to be in there. It's very important to list the statutory site as well as the reason. So you should have that reflected in your minutes before you ever go into executive session. When you go into executive session, you don't take minutes. The minutes will simply reflect that executive session was held. Why don't you have minutes? We don't have them because the whole conversation is meant to be confidential. You're able to have a conversation amongst yourselves without the public, so you don't. There's no purpose for minutes. You can't, as I said before, there's no straw polls back in executive session. You can have a full and a full discussion about the issue, but you don't take a poll of how everybody's going to vote. Keep your discussion to the items that you've gone into executive session for. You may go back for a couple of reasons. You may go back to review the performance of a public employee for potential litigation. To discuss price at which you want to buy some real estate. You may have three different purposes, but you can discuss each of those as long as you want, but don't stray into other areas. And it can be tempting from time to time to do that, and it's important not to. And you can also allow in third parties who may be useful to the discussion. So let's say that you've got an issue involved, you want to buy some property. and you need to have an appraiser or a realtor come in to help you evaluate what an appropriate offer would be on that property. So you can have somebody come back and kind of facilitate that. Typically, you'll want to have somebody from staff, superintendent, the chief, whoever, to come back and facilitate the discussion. And that's all okay. That doesn't eliminate the protections you have for executive session. So what are some common mistakes for executive session? Well, you can't use it for just general personnel issues. I can't tell you the number of times that I've seen an agency want to go into executive session to discuss personnel issues. It's not that broad. As a practical matter, you can pretty much discuss what you want to, but it really is kind of, in some ways, form over substance here. You've got to say it's to review the performance of a public employee and cite to the right statute. You can also talk with your attorney if there's actual or threatened litigation. What that means is if you want to talk to me about something, let's say you want me to either attend your meeting by audiovisual conference or in person to talk about something that's not litigation related, we can't go back in executive session for that purpose unless it falls within some other exception. So your conversation, I attend meetings from time to time, commission meetings, some districts want me to come every meeting, that conversation is in the public, right? Unless there's actual or threatened litigation. Sometimes you want to talk about your negotiation strategy with an interlocal agreement. So you're negotiating with another agency, and there's some sensitive issues, and you'd like to have that out of the public purview so that the other agency doesn't hear what you have to say. Unfortunately, there's no exemption for that. It seems to me it would make sense for you to be able to talk about that in executive session, but it's just not allowed. Interviewing potential board candidates. You can't do that in executive session. That interview, let's say that you have a vacancy on the board, you've got some interested candidates for the position, that interview has to be out in open public meeting. So the questions have to be posed to them. But the evaluation part of it, so once you're done asking your questions, want to go back in executive session and talk about it, you can do that part back there. So why can you go into executive session? I've already touched on a few of these, buying and selling of real estate when public knowledge would likely affect the price from your perspective. Reviewing negotiations on performance of publicly bid contracts, again, where public knowledge would likely increase your costs. Reviewing performance of your current employees or evaluating the applicants for public employment. And then again, meeting with legal counsel involving litigation or potential litigation. And just a note on that, if you go to the next slide, there really are kind of three requirements for if you're going to have the lawyer talk about litigation in executive session. First of all, makes sense, the lawyer has to be there, either in person or by phone, and your minutes really should reflect that the attorney is present either by phone or in person. Secondly, you have to discuss, yes?
Excuse me, but you had just said that minutes weren't taken in executive session.
They're not. The minutes of what is said in executive session are not taken. The minutes will reflect that you went into executive session and your lawyer joined you.
Okay.
That's it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
The second thing is that you're discussing pending litigation or litigation has been threatened. And then third, that the public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence. And that's almost always the case. So when you have litigation or threatened litigation. So then, next slide, some frequently asked questions. I've had a number of questions over the years. I've been doing this since 93, so I've seen a lot of questions about executive sessions. And occasionally I'll have a commissioner call me up later and say, you know, I went into an executive session. I was uncomfortable about it. I thought that it wasn't an appropriate, that we went beyond what we said we were going to talk about. What should I have done? I'm sorry. And I say, well, if you believe that the executive session is not appropriate, then you have an independent obligation as commissioner to leave. First of all, you try and stop the discussion and raise your hand and say, I don't think we should be talking about this. But you can be held individually liable for violating the Open Public Meetings Act. So if there's a clear violation, you have no choice but to leave. The second kind of frequently asked question is, since we can't take a vote, what really can we do back there? What you can do is you can give direction or advice to the chief or the superintendent without taking a formal vote. It happens a lot in labor negotiations where the chief is sitting at the table. You've gone through your discussion about some strategy issues, and you give direction to the chief to go back to the bargaining table and negotiate certain items. That's fairly common. So giving direction to one of your staff members is acceptable. All right, next slide, minutes. The statute says you can record minutes promptly. What does it mean to record them? Well, the statute doesn't say, but what I think it means is that you approve them at your next meeting, whether it's a regular meeting or special meeting, and then those minutes are at that point open to public inspection. The interesting thing is, Pam probably has seen this before, where we get a public records request for minutes immediately after a meeting was held, very next day. I want to see your minutes. Well, we don't have any minutes. We have draft minutes, right? We don't have any formal minutes. Do we produce those or not? Oftentimes I'll say, what's the harm in doing that? But there's a stamp draft on it and getting to the requester, so we don't have a potential public records lawsuit. But I always have a caveat to the requester, these are not the minutes. Secondly, the minutes, as I said, don't include any executive session discussion. They just note that you went into executive session. There's no format that is required by law. So you can have minutes that are very detailed minutes. You can have a whole discussion of what each commissioner said about a particular issue. That's kind of at one extreme. The other extreme is you just kind of list the topics that were discussed and the action, if any, that was taken on each issue. And you can have a range in between those two extremes. Since you record your meetings, it's less important to have this lengthy discussion in your minutes themselves. What I like to see as a lawyer is I want to know what official action the board took. And the more stuff you put in there, sometimes the more complicated it is to figure out what the board did. Anyhow, those are no other requirements regarding the minutes other than those. Next slide is meetings outside of the Open Public Meetings Act. We've talked about this already, so I don't need to go into this again. Just remember that three or more commissioners conversing through email about district business is a meeting. So another type of meeting that is in violation of law is a serial meeting. So how does that happen? That is where one commissioner talks to another, and then that commissioner talks to another, and now you've got three commissioners involved, and that third commissioner goes back to the first commissioner to carry on the conversation. So you've essentially involved all three commissioners in the same discussion, even though three haven't been present at the same time. There is no specific case in the state of Washington that deals with that, but from other jurisdictions there is, and I think that it's a practice to be avoided, and I think most people practice in this area agree with that. So how do you get around that? Well, one way is to have the chief meet with individual commissioners or groups of two commissioners to convey information, right? The question came up earlier from as to how your time at a meeting is limited. How do you kind of prepare for this stuff and make your time at a meeting most efficient? One way is to have the chief or the superintendent brief the commissioners about the issues in advance. And again, because you're doing that in groups of two or just one-on-one, there's no violation of the act. So next slide talks about, well, what happens when you violate the act. It used to be a fairly nominal penalty, $100. It's gone up to $500 for the first violation and then $1,000 thereafter. And then the kicker is that a plaintiff gets their costs and attorney's fees. And this is an action against an individual commissioner. It's not against the district. It's against a commissioner. So your name shows up on the other side of the V. Then finally, any action that's taken at the meeting, the court can declare that null and void because it was in violation of the act. So again, these are serious matters. This good, we go through this training and you understand the limitations to avoid violations. Nathan.
So commissioners are individually liable. So it'd be so-and-so versus Commissioner X. If the commissioner, say one of our commissioners, and this won't ever happen, but say it did, would the district insurance cover it?
That's a question for your insurance agent.
I was worried
you'd
say that.
More than likely, no. Here's the thing. I have been involved in a number of Public Records Act lawsuits, and I've only seen insurance coverage twice. Matt and I just, we took on a new client, and they already had an existing public records law. And for some reason, they had a minor amount of coverage within their, I think it's their CGL policy. But it's unusual. That's an unusual term. And I don't think I've ever seen coverage for an Open Public Meeting Act violation. So probably not.